News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Wow, we got so much in that last segment there, it's hard to even imagine another topic being that, engaging. But there's one on the international scene, and that's Ukraine. I am still calling this, by the way, the news story of the decade in terms of international and military and foreign policy. This is of epic levels right now. Now, so if you want to call in and talk about it, you're welcome to it. And I want to clarify right up front that I believe that the United States can do more, and I'm not talking, though, about putting our boots on the ground. Right now, the Ukrainians have proved their mettle. They have proved that they have the ability to punch the Russians right in the nose. And they are taking a heavy toll for it, but the Russians are taking a heavier toll. Now, we're seeing several things that are changing right now in the overall campaign, but let me just tell you, the assessments of the Russian capabilities are not at all where I would have expected them to be. And you know, so like some of you in the audience, I was a Cold Warrior, all right? I kind of grew up into the hot war era with the global war on terror, Iraq, Afghanistan, all of that. But when I first came into the service, the big bugaboo out there, the peer-level adversary that we expected to always have to be at odds with was the Soviet Union / Russia. They were seen as the aggressor. Now, when the Soviet Union collapsed, many thought that those days were pretty much behind us, although we still looked at them as the largest issue on the horizon. Before China became that near-peer adversary we talk about now. But I can remember in the day, you know, coming in, and it was all about, you know, having to, you know, study up on nuclear, biological, chemical warfare and what to do in the event of a nuclear attack, and what is the difference between, you know, a nerve agent and a blood agent? What's the difference in, you know, calibers of weapons, and how highly trained are the Spetsnaz versus our special forces and Rangers? I mean, what all these things were a part of the lexicon of daily training back in the day. I can remember when the issue was preventing the Soviets from breaching the Fulda Gap in Germany and pushing through into NATO countries. I remember going, I said it before the show before, I remember going to West Berlin before it was just back to Berlin. I remember going there as a kid, standing on the platform on the western side of Checkpoint Charlie and looking across the wall. And everything about that era spoke to this giant, dominant bully on the horizon, the Russian bear that we never wanted to have to mess with. And we're seeing something that I did not expect. If you had asked me as the young lieutenant who was trained to believe in the worth of our adversary, I would never have predicted what I'm seeing right now. I've gotten to where I really enjoy it. In terms of studying military operational capabilities of the Ukraine conflict and others, I go now a lot to the website. It's called understandingwar.org. It's the Institute for War that's run by General Jack Keane. Listen, y'all, if any of you out there are former, you know, military folks who like to read a full-on assessment, like an INTSUM, basically, an intelligence summary that lays it out thick. And I don't mean like glossy headlines, here's what they said in the media. No, I'm talking about down in the weeds, like what level of combat power are they able to amass in this region of the country, and what does command and control look like, and what's the interoperability of their different weapon systems, and are they effective? And anyway, all that's in there. They've got an assessment right now that was just brought to my attention by a young Army officer this past weekend. And I read it, and I was just really taken aback by it. And so as I do the next section here on number two in the Triple Dipper, Ukraine, what now, what next? I think I have to give you an assessment of what is actually on the ground, how it's being assessed by those who are studying it in micro detail. First of all, the Russians have failed, obviously, to take Kyiv, the capital. Don't try and ever tell us, Russia, that you didn't want to because you tried. We are seeing massive levels of war crime level activity left behind on the outskirts of Kyiv. When they couldn't get in, they began to lash out at the civilian populace in places like Bucha. We talked about that some last week. But they've now begun to try and reconstitute their forces and move them to the east. We're hearing right now that an eight-mile-long convoy of armored vehicles is moving from the Kyiv forces, is moving to the east back to the Donbass region. Some believe that what we're about to see right now is a major offensive under a new command by the Russians. UnderstandingWar.org says, we assess the Russian military will struggle to amass a large and combat-capable force of mechanized units to operate in the Donbass within the next few months. They're not saying they won't have any. They're saying that they have been so degraded that they don't believe that their complete operability, their war power, if you will, or their combat power, is going to be what it should be without giving the amount of time necessary to reconstitute. It says the U.S. Department of Defense reported on April 8th that the Russian armed forces have lost 15 to 20% of their combat power. Now, the combat power, how do they assess? They didn't define how they assess that. The DOD didn't say, here's how we define combat power. There are definitions within doctrinal statements of the United States military as to what combat power constitutes. But what we're saying here right now is not having the benefit of how they were defining combat power. Nonetheless, it does not mean they don't have troops. It does not mean they don't have vehicles. It just means that their effectiveness has been substantially degraded. All right, the Russians too, and we can't figure out why they did this, but they did not send over large-scale integral units. They didn't send over what we would call divisions. It's like they took ad hoc. They took a battalion tactical group, that's what they call them, battalion tactical group from here, a battalion tactical group from here, and they threw them out there where they weren't used to working with each other. They didn't always have the same level of capabilities or experience. Some were massed almost entirely through conscripts. And so it says the dozens of Russian battalion tactical groups that retreated from around Kyiv likely possess combat power that is a fraction of what the numbers of units or total numbers of personnel of those units would suggest. In other words, okay, I'm going to throw some notional numbers out. We may see a report that says 15 battalion tactical groups are now moving east toward the Donbass. But in reality, what we're seeing is something that has about a 30% combat power level lower than what 15 would seem to imply. All right, there's that. They go on to note in this assessment that reconstituting these units to restore any notable fraction of their nominal power would take months. And it says that Russian forces withdrawn from around Kyiv and going back to fight in the Donbass will not be reconstituted. They will be demoralized. They are often battered. And a battalion's worth of such troops will not have a battalion's worth of combat power. Okay, there's that assessment. They also point out, though, that morale is a key element of combat power, and consistent reports are showing that the morale of even the elite Russian units remains very, very low. They really, first of all, a lot of the conscripts didn't know they were going to go, and they don't know why they're there. Secondly, those that are what they call their contract forces, meaning conscripts are those who have to do their mandatory service, which I believe is 1 or 2 years. And they're usually not deployable because they're just getting trained up, and if they don't want to stay in, they'll be released back to their civilian occupations or lifestyles to be able to be called up again as reserves later if they had to. That didn't happen. They took huge amount of conscripts, and they threw them into the battle. The other soldiers they have are called contract soldiers. Those are the ones who have decided to, after the period of their conscript is over, they go, you know, I like this. I want to stay here. I like doing this. I'm good at this. Or what? Anyway, so they contract and they become professional soldiers. That's what was expected to be sent to the battle. That is not what was sent to the battle largely. Now, one of the things that did just happen, he's called the Butcher of Syria. Southern Military District Commander General Alexander Voronkov, formerly known as the Butcher of Syria because of his extremely aggressive and devastating tactics. In other words, he destroyed civilian populace. Well, he's been in charge in the Southern District, which I believe includes Mariupol, which if you've seen the report, shows that Mariupol has 95% of all civilian structures in Mariupol are said to be damaged, most beyond repair. Massive casualties in the civilian populace for no reason. Bombing shelters that are known to contain children just so he can. Well, he has now been put in charge of overall command of the entire Ukrainian offensive. So they're consolidating command, whereas they used to have a northern, I believe, and a southern district commander. No, that's that the northern has been relieved. The southern commander general, the butcher of Syria, has now been put in place. All right, tell you what, here's what we're going to do. Copper, let's go ahead and take a break. When we get back, I've got a clip that I want to play you of Congressman Michael Waltz. Congressman Waltz gave a great assessment of where we are. And by the way, top of the hour, Congressman Mo Brooks is going to call in. We'll talk to him a bit. May include Ukraine in that conversation. And if we have to, we'll finish up the discussion on Ukraine after we finish talking with Congressman Mo Brooks. But first, when we get back, we're going to hear Congressman Michael Waltz. He had some great things to say about the Biden administration does not appear to want them to win in Ukraine. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time, I like to say. Hey, I got a caller on line 5. Let me grab that real quick before I go any further. Line 5, Carl from Decatur. Hey, Carl, how you doing today?
Hello, Phil. I was just listening to you reminiscing of Fulda, Germany. Yeah, I come from the Cuban Missile Crisis to being there on the Fulda Gap in the 70s with the 3rd Armored Division. And you were talking about combat readiness. A couple of things. We didn't have enough vehicles to move our equipment during the time we were there. And in one of the training classes that they were teaching us about chemical, biological, and nuclear, they always would show us those suits that were impregnated with some kind of chemical for that biological and nuclear war.
Right.
And I was curious, and I asked, because they always showed us the pack. And when one of the guys in my company opened the pack up, it had disintegrated.
Oh.
So you talk about readiness and I hope we move far from that, because we only were given 24 hours to hold the Russians back according to their tactics until we got reinforcements from the United States and everywhere else, if they came across that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Carl, first of all, thank you for your service, and you served during an amazing time. I mean, and in fact, the stopgap measure for the Fulda Gap was really just y'all putting the finger in the dike and hoping for the best, if I recall. It wasn't like y'all were really going to be able to do everything it took. You were just trying to slow things down while reinforcements
came in.
Yeah. Wow.
That's
yeah.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Thank you, and keep it up.
Yes, sir. Work. Thank you. Appreciate you. Thanks so much. We got a great audience. We got a great audience. I'm telling you right now, I got the best audience. Dadgummit. Listen, I got to tell you, Copper, are you good? I didn't even tell you ahead of time. Clip 3, if you would go ahead and get clip 3 ready for me, I'd appreciate that. As soon as you're ready, let me know. But one of the things that I think needs to be pointed out that happened this past weekend, and by the way, do not take for granted that we are not, we're like, just because the Russian combat power has been degraded does not mean they don't have some massive capabilities that we should still be alert to, not the least of which is the fact that they're a nuclear nation. Not the least of which of the fact is that Russian military doctrine calls for the use of tactical nukes on the battlefield in the event that they feel like that's what it takes to prevent losing. I mean, it's scorched earth. Well, one of the things that happened this past weekend, though, was pretty impressive. Some would call it a photo op. So what? Sometimes the photo op is necessary. Sometimes the photo op is actually as important as other things that can happen. Well, this past weekend, did you know that British Prime Minister Boris Johnson made a trip to Kyiv? He went into the war zone. This is fairly unprecedented for a NATO president, or prime minister in this case, to go into Kyiv. He was there. And then he actually decided, you know what, we're going to go for a walk. And he and President Zelensky went for a walk through the streets of Kyiv to show the people of that city and of Ukraine that the Western world had not forgotten who they were. Went a step further. At the meeting in Kyiv, according to todayonline.com, todayonline.com, dated this past weekend, says at the meeting in Kyiv, Johnson, Prime Minister Johnson, told President Zelensky that Britain was going to provide armored vehicles and anti-ship missile systems, along with additional support for World Bank loans, and that Britain will also continue to ratchet up its own sanctions against Russia and move away from using Russia's energy sources. The support aims to ensure that, quote from Johnson, quote, Ukraine can never be bullied again, never be blackmailed again, never be threatened in the same way again. Wow. Okay, that's new and different, all right? And then you look at some of the things that happened during the same time frame. As the Prime Minister of England is going to Kyiv to walk the streets of the war zone with the president of the beleaguered but yet still fighting nation of Ukraine, Russia decides to bomb a train station. Have you seen this? And Kramatorsk, I believe is how you pronounce it, Friday, a missile attack on a train station in Kramatorsk, a hub for civilians fleeing the east. Same story from todayonline.com. Estimates were 32 dead. When I first saw it, estimates have now been escalated upwards to now rising to 52 dead. 4,000 people were at this train station trying to evacuate the area. They were all displaced civilians, you know, intent upon becoming refugees and crossing the border to a safe zone in Poland or somewhere else. And Russia decided to bomb the train station, knowing full well that it was not a military target. Well, Copper, you got that clip ready from Congressman Michael Waltz? All right, I see ready on the board. Let's do this. Play it. Well, do we have time? Oh, my gosh. I'll tell you what. I want to do this one justice. This is one of the best clips I've heard of anyone in public office talking about the Biden administration. I'll tell you what. You hold that, Copper. We're gonna have Congressman Mo Brooks calling in a few minutes. And when he gets done, when we get done with our time with the congressman, we'll go back to this section because I think we need to finish out a few more things about Ukraine. This impacts us, y'all. All you green suiters out there at Redstone Arsenal, folks down south at Fort Rucker, Maxwell Air Force Base, the Air Force Schoolhouse right here in Alabama, all of this impacts us because we're either supplying the goods or we're providing the training or we're standing ready on the border. And I guarantee you, there's folks in uniform right here in Alabama now that either are prepping for the day or they know people who are already there for the day. Don't think for a second this is not a story that impacts Alabama. In fact, if you get down to it, Lockheed Martin plant in Troy, Alabama, providing Javelin missiles to the Ukrainians. Love that. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Coming back after the top of the hour news with Congressman Mo Brooks. We'll talk to him about what's happening in D.C., what's not happening in D.C., and how things are going on the campaign trail. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. We'll be right back.